Hey, beautiful people, you're listening to The Hue Report, a show that celebrates Black beauty 24/7, 365. I'm your host, Olivia Hancock, and during each episode, I chat with incredible Black beauty entrepreneurs, editors, and executives about their career journeys, unique experiences with beauty, and the products that work for them.
Hi, y'all. This is BA, and I produce The Hue Report. On today's episode, I had the pleasure of speaking to Calvin Qualis, founder and CEO of Scotch Porter. Calvin's story started in his mother's hair salon, and after a brief stint in corporate, he dove back into the beauty world by starting his own barbershop and later a men's grooming and wellness line called Scotch Porter. Today, Scotch Porter is sold in retailers like Target and CVS, and Calvin has raised $7 million in Series B funding. Keep listening to hear more about Calvin's many career pivots, his thoughts on the future of men's grooming, and what the future holds for Scotch Porter.
Calvin, thank you so much for joining me today. You are one of three men, I think, that we've had on the podcast. We are sorely overdue for a men's brand episode. So I'm really excited to be talking to you today.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
I'd love to just dive right in and hear more about your background and your upbringing and what your relationship to beauty and wellness was like as a young man.
Sure. Where do I start? So my background is I grew up as a kid in my mom's beauty parlor and barbershop. My brother and I spent a tremendous amount of time there. Hated it as a kid, right? Because what kid wants to spend their evenings and weekends in a barbershop beauty salon sweeping up hair and running errands, right? But sort of in hindsight and kind of looking back, I think what I appreciate the most is this ability that my mom and some of the other barbers and stylists had in terms of helping people to feel better about themselves, which I could visibly see as a kid by watching the folks walk into the shop one way and then kind of walk out another way. So after they got their hair cut, you know, just looking in the mirror and just the way that they walked out, the step that they had. So that really stuck with me. You know, my mom and the other barbers and stylists, their unique ability to help folks feel better about themselves. Went to college, got a job after college because that was the thing to do, right? You needed to go and get a good job that allowed you to, right? Allowed you to buy a house, to buy a car, to buy stuff. And I kind of subscribed to that because I was told by folks that I thought was older and wiser than me had recommended that that's sort of the way and the path. And I followed that path for a little while, but very quickly realized that that path was going to lead down a road where I would have major regrets. And the truth of the matter is that while I was following that path, I felt very, very empty inside. I knew I was working in the finance department at a market research firm and ultimately knew that that wasn't what I was supposed to be doing. But didn't know what it was that I was supposed to be doing or even what I wanted to do. And I just sort of, as I approached 30, made a promise to myself that I would act, I'd move on sort of the next idea, whether big or small, that stuck with me for a while. And I did just that one day, coming home from work, miserable day at work, spotted a brownstone building, sort of remembered my times growing up in my mom's shop. I would correlate that day of not feeling well and, you know, these vivid memories of being a kid in my mom's shop with what they were able to do in the shop in terms of helping people to feel better. And I thought that this brownstone building that I might have seen, I don't know, 300 times, but just really noticed this day would be the perfect barbershop. Shortly thereafter, opened up a barbershop while continuing the daytime desk job and spotted an issue, grooming issue with the customers visiting the shop. And I've always been a seeker, a learner, and wanted to learn everything about natural ingredients and how I could solve the issues of the customers that were visiting our shop. And became somewhat of a kitchen chemist at home and ended up creating products from the kitchen that I'd bring back to the shop and would get feedback. And over the years, tweaked and sort of perfected those formulas. and had a built-in customer base in the shop before launching online and having some success there, and then moving our products into retail and being able to touch more consumers, especially around our mission, which we're super passionate about, helping men to feel their best, live their best, most fulfilled lives.
Yeah, absolutely. There's so much there that I want to unpack, because I think your story will resonate with a lot of different people, different aspects of that. That feeling of graduating college and being like, I made it, I'm here, but why doesn't it feel good? Like, why am I not content? I think we spend a lot of time sort of telling people, like you said, to get good jobs and get the job that's going to get you the stuff, but not necessarily a lot of time about, we don't spend a lot of time talking about how to build a life that's like satisfactory and that is like deeply content for yourself. I'm really interested in how you sort of got the courage to pivot and like make that promise to yourself. What was that sort of transition point for you when you decided this corporate thing really is not it?
Yeah. Again, you know, just working at the market research firm, you know, I was miserable. I was miserable in that role, and just really desperately looking, you know, to do something that I felt was more meaningful and impactful. And to be just honest with you, sort of the thought of like spending the rest of my life combined to like a cubicle kind of felt like a death sentence to me. And so, you know, one day I had this real sort of internal dialogue with myself, and I was just like saying, like, dude, this can't be it. And life doesn't go on forever. And there are no second chances, right? This is it. And I knew that there was some real financial risks. You know, if I quit my job and started this business and it failed and it was a barbershop, right? So the reality, or at least my reality at that time, was like, hey, this thing is a barbershop and it is likely not going to supplement your income, you know, for the good job that you had. But I think what I feared the most, you know, at that time was like taking too little risks, or, I'd say even honestly settling for like comfortable and ordinary, and all the regrets that come with comfortable and ordinary in my mind. And also I felt like if I didn't walk, it meant that I would sort of be undervaluing myself. And that instead of being great, because I made a promise to a pact to myself that I would be great, and that I would have a life that felt full, I would have sort of kind of given all of that away and would have settled with, like, in my mind, what would be mediocrity. And I really couldn't live with that decision. And so the next day, I sat down with my boss, you know, and discussed my plan to resign. And then sort of as fate would have it, and the greatest coincidence of all time is that she too shared with me that she was going to resign. Wow. Yes. So weird, right? And for me, that was really, I'd say that was really proof that like what's for you is for you. But you need to take action. Right. And that was something that I learned from that. You know, you need to take action. And so that's the big pivot for me from finance to a grooming company.
Absolutely. I want to talk a little bit about the barbershop days. And I think it's so funny because, you know, you said you were working this market research job, but you were really miserable. Obviously, that had a lot to do with the circumstances, I'm sure, the company. But then this barbershop ended up sort of acting as a space for you to do some real live market research, right? Like you were noticing what your clients were going through, what pain points they had, and sort of ideating based on that. Can you speak a little bit to like how you recognize that you needed to go from this business that's a barbershop, sort of an established type of business, versus a men's grooming line, right? Like moving from a service to a product. What did that look like?
Yeah, I think one, you know, in those early days, I was just trying to figure things out, right? And again, sort of bored with the daytime desk job and looking for some sort of creative outlet to express myself. And so the barbershop was just that. So it wasn't, you know, the idea behind the barbershop wasn't initially to create a men's grooming line. I started the barbershop, and it was not just a regular barbershop, it was a cultural hub. And so, and what I mean by that is, yes, you can come get a fresh cut, you know, but we also had a stage, and, you know, we had musicians performing there regularly. We had art exhibitions. You know, we had some cool, you know, clothing items. So, you know, folks could literally walk into the barbershop despite what their week looked like or their month looked like, and kind of walk in, get a fresh cut, potentially have a drink, listen to some great music, maybe see an art exhibition, you know, have all those conversations that happen in a barbershop, right? Life, relationship advice, all kind of things, kind of walk out with, like, you know, either some fresh kicks or, you know, a hat or something, and kind of walk out really, really feeling transformed. And so that was the idea behind the barbershop. And it allowed me to sort of flex my creative muscle. With building that, I noticed, you know, guys coming in at that time, beards were becoming a thing. Lots of guys had tons of hair. They weren't necessarily using product to moisturize, tame, or frizz their beards or hair. And I just saw a potential issue or problem that I could solve. And started to craft products from the kitchen. And so that's how the products came to be. But the opportunity, I think, that I saw, because the business was built around helping, even that business, the barbershop, was built around helping people to feel the best, I quickly realized that this barbershop, albeit it was great, it was a cultural hub, you know, still today I get, you know, folks that will reach out occasionally and say, I miss Center Stage Cuts. What I realized, though, is that it would not allow me to reach the amount of people that I wanted to reach. I've always had big, ambitious goals. And that barbershop would not have allowed me in that single location to be able to reach the amount of men, millions of men that I wanted to reach around our mission and really, you know, helping to transform people's lives. So I realized it was great, but it was too small for what I wanted to achieve.
I'm really fascinated by how many, like, different times you sort of have gone through a metamorphosis, right? And realized, like, okay, no, we're going bigger. I'm interested in particular, so you said you grew up in a barbershop, hair salon environment, and we know as Black folks, like, these are really sacred places. And so I love that you sort of infuse your barbershop and your version of that. It's like a community center, right? It's not.
Absolutely.
Yes. And we know that barbershops and hair salons can be that without the, you know, frills or without the sneakers and all the cool stuff that you added to yours. But it's neat that you sort of integrated all these different aspects of the culture into one space.
Yeah, no, it was definitely a fun time, and it was an interesting shop. You know, it was the decision to close down the shop and focus on just the product business was a very tough decision. You know, but ultimately I think it was the right decision, in terms of what I really wanted to accomplish and the impact that I ultimately wanted to have, with the business.
What was the reception to the products like in the early days? So I imagine you were sort of taking these products back to your barbershop customers and they were testing it out. What were those early iterations of Scotch Porter like?
I'd say in the early days, you know, the reception was pretty great. We launched in our barbershop, and then, as I shared earlier, on D2C with, you know, starting really, really strong with, like, our beard care products that did well. We then launched one or two hair care SKUs, and our hair care has also taken off quite well. And then just a bit of a tidbit, you know, in fact, you know, end of 2022, we were the fastest growing male grooming brand in hair and beard at retail. So in those early days, the brand did really, really well and we're still seeing really great traction today.
Yeah, that's incredible. I want to talk a little bit about finding investors and raising capital. So you have now raised $11 million in your Series B funding. And we know that like that is no small feat, particularly as a Black founder. Can you speak a little bit to, and particularly thinking about like other people who might be seeking capital, thinking about other founders who are trying to do the same thing, what was that journey like for you of trying to sort of find investors?
Yeah. So one, I'd say raising capital is no easy feat for anyone, but it can be particularly difficult for, you know, a brand, you know, to raise whose priority has been on serving men. There's still a bit of a stigma that says men, you know, only care about the bare necessities. And those are things like shave cream and deodorants and body wash. And then, you know, to your point, it's also not easier to raise capital as a Black founder, and a Black owned business. I do recall taking some of those video calls and meetings during the fundraising process. And I was almost always the only one in the room that looked like me or shared a similar background. You know, it's a bit unfortunate that there's still sort of this inherent bias, you know, where Black founders, Black owned businesses are viewed as more risky investments. And this is despite nearly two decades of data that says otherwise, right? That diverse founders ultimately outperform, you know, by 30%, you know, when we go public or acquired versus others. We still have this almost insurmountable roadblock in front of us when it comes to fundraising. But all said, I was really, really fortunate enough to find a really great partner who's definitely committed to really supporting founders and businesses of color to really become the next big companies of the future. And that partner is in Pendulum.
Awesome. That's great. Yeah, I feel like it's a matter sometimes, like you said, of finding the right person who's willing to make that investment. And I know you've said in the past that your business got a big boost from the pandemic. What was that like for you sort of navigating this budding company, this more than budding, right? Like flourishing company at the same time as you're dealing with a global pandemic. You know, you're a Black founder and you're dealing with the summer of 2020, all of these things sort of happening all at one time. I could imagine is really overwhelming. What was that like for you and how did you navigate all of those various challenges?
It was definitely difficult. I would say that we really focused on like where and how we could add the best value and what we could control. You know, it was definitely a time of uncertainty. There was lots of restlessness. We like everyone around us were in the throes of like a deadly public disease that most folks hadn't seen in our lifetimes. You know, coupled with like a mix of like emotions around, you know, hurt, afraid, angry surrounding the death of George Floyd. You know, furthermore, we had to devote like a lot of energy to remain or have some semblance of stability or normalcy in a time that wasn't very stable or normal, including making sure that, you know, everyone was mentally fit and well. And so it was a juggle, to say the least. But I'd say that we shifted, you know, our focus to what we could control, and that was adding value to our customers' lives and really by doubling down on our mission of arming them with the tools and information needed to kind of feel their best during some uncertain times. So we did a lot of, and we still do this today, so it's not something that we just did during the pandemic, but we had lots of experts on around mental wellness and physical wellness and, you know, had tons of conversations about like therapy and the importance of therapy and talking. And so we did that stuff and we continue to do that stuff today. So we more focused on what we could control in trying to figure out where we could add value in such an unstable time to our employees' lives and our customers' lives.
Absolutely. Yeah. And to that point, I mean, it sort of goes hand in hand. There's that common phrase of, you know, when you look good, you feel good, right? So really great to hear that you're not only interested in the grooming aspect, but wellness is really holistic, right? It's not just what you look like. And sort of coming out of that, you know, I know from, I'm actually a market researcher by trade. So I think it's so funny that you hated market research. I know from my end that like the pandemic sort of scrambled all types of consumer behavior. So do you think that there were sort of any changes in your consumer base or any changes in the interest around men's grooming, like based on the pandemic, or maybe it was happening before the pandemic and the pandemic sort of exacerbated it? What does that look like in terms of, I mean, you spoke to earlier, there's a stigma around men's care and grooming. That's changing, and that's changed really quickly in the last few years. So what changes have you sort of seen in this world, in this arena?
Yeah, I will say that during, you know, the pandemic, I will say that we've seen more men sort of experiment with products, you know, that they haven't tried in the past. So things like, and really gained sort of a newfound appreciation for those products. So eye creams and face masks and moisturizers and other products. And I think some of that has stuck with them. And from our own data, you know, we have seen a big uptick in men sort of buying more collections in sort of bundles and products and creating regimens. In the past, I'd say the average customer might have, you know, purchased one or two hero items from a collection, you know, but since then they've kind of incorporated additional products sort of from the same category. So if once upon a time they were buying face lotion, you know, now they're buying the scrub and the face wash, right? So we are seeing that, and folks are really building out their routine. So I do think that some of the experimenting during the pandemic has stuck, and we are seeing men sort of incorporate regimens and use products that they may have not traditionally used in the past.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I feel like we've sort of seen more and more men. I know there's a lot of conversation about celebrity skincare lines, but in particular, we've been seeing male celebrities that are putting out grooming products, which feels really different from the environment that we were living in just 5 years ago, right? I don't think Brad Pitt would have been putting out $200 face cream for men just 5 years ago.
No,
so
it absolutely.
Seems like really you were ahead of the trend in sort of seeing that consumer need really early on in the barbershop and sort of evolving from there.
Yeah, I mean, listen, the demo that we had in the barbershop, you know, were predominantly men of color, so Black and Hispanic men in that barbershop. And it is custom for men of color to sort of visit the barbershop or spend a bit more on grooming and self-care. So for me, I wasn't unfamiliar with that because, I mean, I owned a barbershop and I'd watch folks come in and, you know, spend $50, you know, every 2 weeks on a cut. And now today, you know, folks are spending much more depending on the barbershop that they visit. Right. So there is this care, right, in terms of how we show up and how we feel in the world. And so I've always been accustomed to understanding that there are a core group of men that really care. And they spend and they're interested in looking and feeling good. And so I think having additional items and exploring and experimenting and finding, you know, an eye cream, you know, as you approach a certain age, you know, it works. It helps with, you know, the bags of discoloration under the eyes or whatever the case is. Right. You know, there's this interest in looking good. And so men have had the opportunity to experiment and are now willing to kind of continue on. And I think video and Zooms and Instagram and TikTok and all these other platforms where you have to show up, you know, has also added, you know, to this need or desire to leverage products to look and feel our best.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. I think the Zoom effect is very real. I was definitely one to use the little filters early on in the pandemic. there is a sense of, you know, you're showing up and you're having to see yourself reflected for several hours a day. Might as well look good while you have to sort of look at yourself all day long.
Absolutely.
Your brand, Scotts Porter, has now had some really big wins, right? We talked about your fundraising earlier. You've got some retail partnerships with CVS, Target, Walmart. How does it feel to see your hard work paying off? How does it feel sort of looking back on the journey that you've taken?
So I would say it's a pretty amazing feeling to see, you know, see our products on shelves and in customers' hands. As an example, over the holiday, you know, I was at the checkout in a retail store and saw a woman with like four of our products in her hand. And she's like telling the cashier that she was buying some last minute gifts for her hubby. I snapped a picture sort of as a keepsake because it was a surreal moment. Not that I haven't seen people with our products before, but it was just a surreal moment that, you know, that last minute sort of gift, you know, Scotts Porter was in the consideration set. And it also reminded me, like, 7 years ago, it was just an idea. I was in my kitchen, like, mixing products. And here I was, like, witnessing sort of the blossoming of this plant that was, like, once a seed, right? All the hard work, you know, all the watering, all the care that the team has put into this has kind of manifested into what I hope and really believe will become a tree. And so it's just super gratifying. I think it's also a powerful testament to what's really possible when we speak on it and we act on it with intentionality and we're passionate and we mean well, you know, what will come of all of it. So I'm gratified. Super happy.
That's incredible. I can't even imagine the feeling. I always think about, you know, singers or musicians when you see the crowd sort of singing every word of their songs. It's like people are waking up in the morning and grabbing their Scotch Porter and, you know, like that's a part of their daily routines. And that's got to be such a cool feeling to sort of envision. I do have to ask, your name is neither Scotch nor Porter, to my knowledge. Mm-hmm. So where did the name come from?
So once upon a time, in my earlier years, 7 years ago was my earlier years, I loved a good scotch. And Porter, Gregory Porter, is a jazz musician who has the most amazing voice. So it was literally just me scribbling down sort of the things that I love. That sort of culminated into what we have here, which is Scotch Porter. And I thought at the time, I still do think that it really works well for a men's grooming brand. So it's just a culmination of the things that I loved at that time and love.
It sounds good. And I think that's neat that, you know, like your DNA is all over this, including your favorite drink and your favorite musician. And, you know, yes. Like that is really, really cool. I think you can really tell when someone's work is like infused and authentic to themselves. So yeah. That's really neat. I do have to ask, I want to get into some products. So for you personally, I imagine, you know, you have very, very busy days and nights as a founder. What do you do for relaxation, for R&R, when you get the time?
I will visit my mom regularly. And when I say regularly, because she would say not so regularly. but, you know, I try to visit my mom, you know, once every 2 to 3 weeks. She lives far enough, but not very far, that allows me to do that. And I would say that I try to start off my morning with just like a little bit of meditation. So I am not a religious person, but I definitely pray. I'll practice some sort of breathing exercises. I am a podcast junkie, and a seeker and I am a lifetime learner. And so I find some comfort, in actually downtime and kind of like listening to different podcasts. I love, 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 love music. Fun fact. Once upon a time, when I was in college, I used to love to sing so much,
wow.
That sing so much that, you know, I did a couple of shows here and there, and it was interesting. But yeah, I prefer the background much more, and I don't have the vocal chops that I used to. But I love music.
Scott Porter could have been a stage name, is what I'm hearing.
Oh yeah, that would have been terrible. But but yeah, those are some of the things that I like to do, and I also try to get in some exercise. So I am a work in progress on that front, but I've made tons of progress over the last couple of years. I'm definitely a much more healthier person, not only physically, but also mentally, than I was, you know, maybe 4 or 5 years ago.
Absolutely. That's awesome. And what are your sort of favorite Scotch Porter or non-Scotch Porter? Like, what does your grooming routine look like? What are your favorite grooming products?
It's super simple. I love, you know, our Scotch Porter Hair Balm. I use it almost religiously. And I love our face lotion. You know, products that we currently don't have, but that I absolutely love are, you know, vitamin C products. So there's a vitamin C product that I'm using right now, and I will likely draw a blank on the product. But I mix that in with our lotion. It's just basic vitamin C. And sunscreen. I use sunscreen religiously. We don't currently carry a sunscreen right now, but I'm using, sometimes I use Black Girl sunscreen. And then at other times I am using, I'm drawing a blank on the sunscreen, but I'm a sunscreen user as well.
Awesome. And I love Black Girl sunscreen. It is so good. Very moisturizing.
The founder is awesome.
Yes, she's amazing. We interviewed her a couple seasons ago. What is next for Scotch Porter? You said you don't currently carry a sunscreen. I don't know if that has any indication of product development, but what's next for the future, and what do the next 7 years look like?
So I'd say that I started this business as a little hobby. I shared that, you know, many years ago, trying to just solve the grooming issues of the customers that came into our shop. You know, as the business has grown, I've also grown personally, and I now understand that business can be more than just self-serving, and it can be really a tool leveraged to change my life, to change my family's lives, to change our employees' lives, to change others. And really that if we make sure as business owners that our business aligns with our own personal why, we can really create something magical with our businesses, and that business shouldn't just be about financially serving us, but also needs to spiritually serve us. And so, you know, with all of that, you know, my vision for Scotch Porter is to really play a part in making millions of people's lives better. Not only with our products, so you'll see some additional sort of adjacent categories come from the brand, you know, including, and I don't know when this will air, but some additional body care products that we're launching soon. You know, you'll see much more products come from the brand, but then also services and, you know, and information that really add value to our customers' lives. I really want to have given more than we've taken. And have added real value to our customers and communities' lives. And we do some of that by, like, our social impact fund, which since we launched in 2022, we've donated a little over $250,000 and have impacted roughly 22,000 lives, you know, through some forward initiatives and programs around job education and training and recidivism. And so that is what I want. I want to reach millions more. And I want us to do good, because doing good is, to me, it not only feels good, but I also feel like as a leader that it is our responsibility that when we have the opportunity to really do good and impact others, that we have a job like that. That is what we should be doing. So.
Absolutely. I'm really sensing a through line here, right? Like, you envisioned a different life for yourself when you were, you know, working corporate, you envisioned a different type of barbershop, and now you're sort of envisioning a different type of company, one that really is able to spread beyond what we usually think about, which is money and, you know, capital, into sort of like a real definitive change. That's really beautiful.
Absolutely. Because at the end of the day, we can't take any of it with us. We all got to leave here. And, in my opinion, we got somebody to answer to. And so.
Absolutely. Yeah. I love it. Calvin, thank you so, so much for your time today. This was such a wonderful, wonderful conversation. And I'm really excited for hopefully some male listeners to hear about Scotch Porter and bring in a little bit of a different audience to the Hugh Report.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me and allowing me to share my story and share the brand story.
This podcast was produced by B.A. Kasanga. Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. If you like what you heard, head over to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts to catch up on all episodes of The Hugh Report. You can also stay connected with our growing Black beauty community by following us on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at The Hugh Report.